Oh, so you want to hear a story? Well, my friend, it is late and I have told many stories tonight. I know that I didn't tell any stories about the famed Catalina de Esteban de Florina de Oratrios. Now, why didn't you lead with that, my friend? There are many places to start with this particular story. We could start with a circus coming to town, or a boy lost from his home seeking adventure. We could speak of a duelist coming to town, or the birth of twins that were as alike as the sea and the sky. We could talk about how Catalina met each of these people, and how these meetings would change the course of her life. We could talk about how all of this unlikely cast became royal guards to the Duke. But no, there's only one place to really begin this story, and that is at the New Year's Eve party. And even that feels too early to begin this story, but all stories must start at the beginning, no? And this is that beginning. The best of the royal guards were given the night off to join the Duke at his party, not as subjects, but as friends. Things might have turned out different had even one of these four been on guard protecting him, but alas, this story begins with tragedy. The story begins with five people finding the body of the Duke. There was the young Catalina, naive and kind, unaccustomed to the ways of the world. Neustroy, the man of contradictions, hating nobles yet choosing to work for one. Sigrithr, the warrior, looking for a worthy cause and an even more worthy opponent. Magdalena, out to prove that she was the best at everything. And Cormac, looking to become a legend, but more often looking for love. They all surround the Duke's body as he is found dead. There is a brief moment before the chaos that follows. Catalina sobbing over her father, red blood seeping into the dark fabric of her dress. So, you guys, the four of you, and Catalina, find the dead body of the Duke. This is the night of a party. It is the grand festival the Duke throws every year for you guys. But that is far from your mind now, as you realize that there is an assassin about, and you need to protect Catalina and get out of here. Because this doesn't look good, just the dead body of the Duke lying on the floor in a pile of blood. What do you do?
Magdalena, or Lena, as she's going to request to be called, she's going to do a quick sweep of the room to see if there is anything that we've missed. Anyone hiding, I don't know, someone threw a weapon to the side, someone's running away out a window.
Yes. Sorry, I'm pulling up a character sheet so I can see what skills are. Make a wits with notice roll. So, for those listening at home, we are playing 7th C. In the system, you get to add your traits to your skills and then roll all those D10s up, do some magic, and determine how successful you are.
Okay, I am aware that you explained this earlier. I do so much better in the moment, just like Cody. So I'm rolling wit. My wit is 2. Is that the amount of D10s I'm rolling? Or how many
Do that and add how much skills you have in notice. How much notice do you have?
Do I not have that written down?
If you don't have notice, you might have 0.
I am going to guess I have 0 because I don't see notice. Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. You roll 2 dice then. You're looking for 10s.
Okay.
Or groups of 10.
I had a 6-0 and a 6.
So that's 12, so that's 1 success.
So you get 1 raise. All right. So making a quick sweep of the room, you're not able to find anything super grand. You do notice an open window, and you're like, they probably went that way. You quickly run over to look through it. You know, there's like a breeze fluttering. You do not see anyone escaping, but you didn't see anyone running down the halls or anything. The door doesn't look battered, and you're like, this seems like a pretty good way for someone to break in, murder the Duke, and escape.
Mm-hmm. Was the body stabbed or poisoned? Or question mark?
Stabbed.
So there's like a knife actively protruding out of his body.
Yes.
Or a clear stab mark with blood pooling out of it.
There's a clear stab wound, is that what I would say? It doesn't mean he wasn't poisoned as well, but like...
Okay, well, I asked that question like as a joke, but now I'm serious. Is there a knife left in him, or is there not a knife left in him? Because now I care.
The answer is no, there's not a knife left in him, but there is a stab wound.
Okay, that's fine.
Unless, I mean, do you want there to be a knife in there? I don't know. How is this going to backfire to me?
No, if you said no, the answer is no, that's fine. That's fine.
I'm going to say no because I don't foresee the 4D chess you're playing with this knife, and I don't...
Oh, I was going to take it and keep it with me until I came back. This was going to be like my Inigo Montoya sword that I would eventually plunge into the heart of his killer.
If that's the case, yes, the knife is there. You can take it. I just don't know I don't want this to be the smelling salt thing. Like, it isn't a clue. Like, you know, other than he was stabbed, and I want to establish that immediately.
Well, maybe then let me ask you this as a GM, because this is, like, way down the line, right? Because this is, like, we're not necessarily figuring this out tomorrow. Would it be all right for me to treat this as a clue with the understanding that it might not immediately lead anywhere? You know what I mean?
Yes, as long as you do not start battering down the door saying, but what about the smelling salts?
So Njostroy doesn't say anything, at least not at first. He just walks over to the body, pulls the knife out, wipes it clean on the Duke's robes, and sticks it in his belt.
Just the image of this. So as you do this, just... Catalina sobbing over her, like, father's body as you just, like, casually pull a knife out of him and put it in your belt.
Cormac is going to put his hand on Catalina's shoulder and try to start lifting her up and say, I'm sorry, m'lady, but we need to go.
She... can be moved, she is not like fighting you, but she is like basically catatonic at this point.
Right, she's like crying and not really able to direct herself.
Right, like she doesn't really have any idea what's happening. You know, like she is the worst type of escort mission.
Wait, you mean the ones that walk faster than your walk speed but slower than your run speed?
Yep,
precisely. That.
Is she like okay? So Njostroy is going to bend down next to her. And
she is 16, if that's the question you had.
Oh, is she 16 right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, right, because we shortened this time skip. Okay, never mind. Sorry. In that case, well, I guess Njostroy will still bend over because he's pretty tall. And is going to, kind of gently take her hand and then spark a fire underneath of it to burn her just a little, not a lot. Just like that sharp shock and go...
There is time for crying. There is also time for running. Your life is still in danger. What is coming will hurt worse than the fire. We must move, and you must be calm.
She quickly pulls her hand back and gives you a dirty look, but then, bucks up a little bit.
The next few hours will be painful. I will not hide this from you, but we must leave now.
Oh, okay.
Sigurthur is going to kneel down next to the Duke. Close his eyes if they aren't already closed, and draw a little rune on the floor, and then say a quick prayer to see his soul to the afterlife.
All right.
As Lena is doing her sweep of the room, she gets back to the door that they came through and does looks to see in the hallway if the hallway is clear or if... I don't know. There's been other people noticing what's happening.
At this point, you do see a guard patrol marching towards you.
Okay.
Or towards this room, not you specifically.
Yeah, yeah. She pops back in. Siggy, I do not know how long this is going to take, but we need to move now. There is someone coming now.
Oh, someone comes and maybe needs distracted. This is where Njostroy finds his joy.
And Njostroy kind of heads down the hallway and then starts a fire down the hall. Like, whatever way we're going to be running away from, Njostroy starts a fire on the other side of the room and kind of, throws some flare on it, you know, so, leaping creatures and dancing monsters in the flame, and starts screaming down, "Oh, help me! The building is on fire! Oh, we need help! All guards, to the fire! The Duke is in danger! Oh, his daughter too! Everyone, to the fire! Quick, put it out!" Can I make... okay, yeah, you can tell me.
I was gonna say, perform in panache.
I'm pretty sure you're making it worse.
What can be worse? This place might as well burn down. I care not for the building.
Right. So whatever, what's your panache stat?
Oh, I got it, buddy. I got it. I just had to find it. Okay, I got one, two. I got two.
Okay, so two in panache, and then you're using performance.
No. I did two raises.
Oh, yeah, two raises.
Yes.
All right. So usually I'm supposed to give you, like, objectives and stuff, but, you know, this is the first thing.
In this case, yeah, it's just meant to distract. So, like, right. I guess however successful is however many less guards are chasing us.
Yeah, so I will say with one raise, you guys have a little bit more lead time to get out of here. Like, enough guards are pulled away, and the fire is enough in the way that they can't immediately chase you. So you guys have a brief moment before you are being hunted down. So I'm assuming as you guys realize that things are going badly and you need to get out of here, who is taking lead to run down the hall first? Or what's your marching order?
Lena will take lead.
Sigurður is also going to try to take lead.
I will go in the middle with Catalina.
Njostroy would be like facing backwards, like walking backwards with them. Yeah, like, you know, in the case that someone comes up from behind, he can just start throwing fireballs like crazy or try to light the hallway on fire.
Okay. Everyone roll me brawn and athletics. So you guys are just trying to book it, right?
Hey, Zach, you know when he said I had a chance to roll seven dice? I'm rolling seven dice. You picked one of my best combinations.
Dadgum!
Did you get a 10 out of your two dice?
I did get one 10. And then, well, I really only got two raises, but I rolled a 6, 9, 10, and 7.
Wow, I didn't actually roll all that well. Oh, but I get to reroll one.
Oh, I could have rerolled one on my performance. That's okay.
You did so poorly otherwise.
I know, it's a shame.
So you want the total, right?
The number of raises.
So for instance, I got a 27, which means I got two raises, correct?
What are the three numbers you did?
10, 8, and 9.
So in this case, the answer is yes, it's two, but think of it like Yahtzee. You're trying to make Yahtzees, and you can't keep using the same dice over and over again. So you need to create sets of 10, like with individual dice sets.
Okay.
Going back over everyone, how many raises did everyone get?
Three.
Raises, how many tens you made?
Yes.
Two.
One.
Two.
Okay. So, quickly running through this castle, even though they are jockeying for position, Lena and Sigurður are able to keep their wits about them, dodge where they know patrols are, and quickly, like, run past, surprise the guards that they aren't able to avoid. They're startled enough that you guys are behind them and locking doors by the time that they, like, realize what happened. Cormac is just very trying to keep Catalina moving at this point. She's still mostly catatonic, even with Njostroy burning her. She is not doing well. You know, she saw her father murdered. Her father was murdered and then she found his body. That's a distressing time to be alive. Nostroy's distractions are helping as he's lighting things on fire to keep people off your trail and keeping like kind of a barrier between you guys as you guys are able to make it out of the palace.
Any idea where we're headed now?
Do you prefer horses or boats?
Which would be easier to track?
Well, I mean, depending on kind of... I guess water doesn't leave trails, but, you know, we have to hire a boat that maybe has paperwork associated. I'm not totally sure.
I'm the Duchess, and I guess...
No! No, you are not. Actually, good point. Bring this up now. You are no longer the Duchess. You have a new name. Don't say that at all.
You say you're like dejected.
This is difficult to explain. You are the Duchess as long as your father was alive. Someone killed him. Is means coup. You are now nothing. And your name is dangerous, so.
But do they know that yet?
Yeah, actually, that's a solid point, actually.
We could get a boat and be gone before anyone realizes, right?
Can kings steal boats?
So let's get a boat.
You guys quickly make it away and are able to find a small ship that the five of you can man easy enough and put out to sea on what is maybe the worst night of many of your lives. All right. That was our introduction. Now let's do a proper character introduction for your peeps. Who would like to go first? Give me good descriptions of your physical and your physical traits and your personality. I don't want any of this. I look like a dude.
Wait, you want descriptions of our personality and our personality?
Yes.
Shut up.
When I go back in 4 years from now and commission artwork for Caitlin's character, I don't want it to be like, she has dreads, moving on. Paint me a picture with your words.
I can go first if no one's like chomping at the bit.
Go for it.
So like, well, on this boat, Neostroy at this point would probably be like more comfortable now that they are away from the city, but he still would just be kind of like awkwardly standing in a corner of the boat, very like ramrod straight and uncomfortable. His general appearance is that he wears kind of slightly shabby looking clothes. They almost look like they're burnt or covered in ash. His skin is either feverish or burnt. It's hard to tell which. And he kind of constantly has a slight smell of smoke coming off of him. He wears one eye patch over his right eye, let's say. Did I say if he has a beard? I think he has a beard. I imagine him being, having a beard and kind of salt and pepper hair that's swept back. He's very tall and very thin. He looks almost sickly. His personality is that he is generally kind of awkward and standoffish unless he is performing. And then he's a lot more boisterous and charismatic, but he has to be doing a performance in order to do that. His particular performance that he does is pyromancy. So he's basically like a flame juggler, but uses magic to create fiery puppet shows specifically for children.
His life is really going to be turned around when he hears Shakespeare say, "All the world's a stage." He's like, "What? I cannot be awkward?"
Oh, no. He, as long as he's performing, you know, like he has like an on-set persona. But when he's not, he's uncomfortable.
Yeah, no.
No, but he's saying Shakespeare's line, "All the world's a stage." That means we're always acting. And that means he's always acting.
So what's Shakespeare called in this world? Spear Shake?
I feel like Shakespeare's already a good like fantasy name. So we don't have to redo that one. Like
the great playwright Wilhelm Spearshake.
I think I made that joke of Spearshake to you. You monster.
I'm sorry. I didn't.
Caitlin names everything, steals other people's. Right.
Zach, is there more detail than that you want?
No, that's good.
Okay. I can give more.
I just wanted it to be a little bit more than just like two adjectives, especially for physical, because that's not going to change a ton. You know, if your personality is a little bit different, you know, I don't need that becomes apparent in the vocal medium we do.
Gotcha.
How you look doesn't, because it's a vocal.
Physically, he is tall, skinny, always kind of flushed red or burnt, beard, swept back gray hair, eye patch, and his clothes always seem a little bit singed. Oh, and he never wears warm weather clothes, no matter how cold it is.
Yeah, it's currently probably around like the 40s Fahrenheit.
Yeah, he'd be wearing like a sleeveless tunic.
All right, just going down the order in this. Caitlin, you're up.
Sure, I'm playing Cormac O'Rourke. He is a young man from Innismore. He's got bright red hair, kind of longish with a little wave to it. He's trying to grow in a beard, but he can't quite do it yet. But don't tell him that. he's young and fairly muscular. He's pretty fit. What else do we need to describe?
Personality.
He's really eager, a bit naive at this point, but that's quickly disappearing. He is a romantic sort of guy and wants to be a legend, like all of the stories that he's heard growing up.
Would you say he wants to be like the very best? Like no one ever was.
No one ever was.
I didn't actually. he wants to be famous. He wants to be known. He wants to be a legend, like all of these Inish stories that he's heard growing up. And he's pretty idealistic as well.
Lena.
Okay, so I am playing Magdalena Ingrid Maria Rosero. However, she will be going by Lena. She was born into nobility with her twin brother, Castilian father, Eisen mother. She has the most middle of the road looks. I think the way I described it before is she's like the NPC in the background. No one notices her. The sliders, if you're doing like character sliders, everything is smack dab in the middle. No extraordinary features, nothing like that, which interpretation, open to interpretation. However, she tends to be very naturally talented. And because of that, she is very confident and impish.
I like it. All right, that just leaves you, Vinny.
All right, I'm playing Sigurthur Eric's daughter. She is from Vestinmin Navanyar. She's like a female. She's fairly young. She has long braided auburn hair. I like how I'm miming for this audio medium. Fairly pale skin. She's pretty tall, especially for probably not as tall as Nostroy, but tall. Probably. How tall is Cormac?
I don't know, like 5'10 or so.
Okay, taller than Cormac.
Okay.
she's muscular. She's like a berserker warrior type person. Definitely has a warrior's build. She is can be kind of hot-headed, and she likes to fight. Her goal in life is to find someone who can challenge her in combat. And she hasn't found that person yet. Any other details you think I should put in there?
I think that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should also probably describe Catalina, because she will be an important NPC that will be around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. That means she's not going to die too. Awesome.
I mean, you guys escaped to the boat. At this point, Catalina is very naive and kind, as I said earlier. She hasn't been exposed to very little of the world. She's been sort of trained to be the Duke's replacement, like as his sole heir. But he was also not old yet, and he was generally well-loved. The city that he had treated everyone well. It was a utopian-esque society, at least for the time that it is in. You know, the peasants and plebeians were all treated respectfully.
You mean he didn't call them plebeians?
Plebeians is a social class, you know, right? It's not just an insult.
Yeah. Still.
Come on, Caitlin, get with your history. But like, he treated everyone well. There was more time off. There was lavish festivals. Like the party that you guys all just escaped from, it is not uncommon for him to invite a lot of peasants to that, as well as nobles, and a mixing of stuff like that. She has a skewed view of reality because of this, because he is one of the only places that does this in this kind of time period.
Wait, can you give a little bit of like what this time period is?
This time period is...
Or the setting, I guess.
The setting of 7th Sea takes place about, like, pre-nationalistic Europe. So basically, like, pre-industrial revolution.
So, like, 15, 1600s?
1700s, okay. Right before things really started hitting the industrial revolution and countries started really defining their borders. I think late 16,
okay.
Early 17, from what I can understand. Guns are commonplace,
okay.
But it's not. It's like flintlocks still,
okay.
Kind of thing. It's still monarchy. Everything's like ruled by monarchies and kings and queens and all that. There's one country that does not matter for where we're playing this game that doesn't have that. But
do we want to go through each character and explain their like ties to Europe, or no, not bother?
I can shoot it off real quick. Sigurthur is from Norway or Scandinavia. Innismore is Ireland, which is where Cormac is from. Yerusha? I think that's how you say it. I could be saying it wrong. Is Russia, which is where Nostroy is from. And Castile and Isen are Spain and Germany, respectively. Or loosely inspired by these. Or strongly inspired by these places. They're not exactly the same, but in this game, in this world setting, they are very similar analogs. For example, Isen is where, quote-unquote, Martin Luther is from in this setting and starts a reformation. Though they're all called, you know, something, you know, bargain. It's the great value version of all of these. Matthias Lieber starting, like, the reconciliation or something like that. Switching back to Catalina, though, she has long dark hair. She is the epitome of Spanish beauty. She has dark olive skin.
Castilian.
Sorry. Castilian. She is very pretty. She stands out in basically every room she's been in. She is the model of propriety, being raised as a noble woman. But yeah, I think that's about it. Unless someone, you guys want more about her.
How old is she? Did we say that already?
She is 16.
What age can somebody take the throne here?
I am saying 18.
Okay. And what's a reason that she cannot immediately become Duchess?
I mean, the fact that there's someone out to murder her.
That.
Well, yeah, but like, it would be good to know.
I mean, usually she would be the suspect in this murder. It would be like, who did this murder? Like, her. That or someone with an army camped outside that just declared themselves Duke.
All right. So, in case this episode wasn't confusing enough, we're going to be playing Companion's Tale to create some of the world and get through this time skip that we're going to be doing of 3 years.
In case you were, like, eager for us to start playing this game, too bad, we're going to play a different game.
In making this, I wanted everyone in our group to be a little bit more involved in the world creation process and have a little bit more control over the storytelling. So we're going to play Companion's Tale. It's a fun little game where you get to, like, build a world, and we're hacking it so that it doesn't resolve, and it's not just about a hero. So, to begin with, a few guiding principles that they mention that I forgot to tell. Name places, not people. Truth is relative. And disagree by making up your own facts. So, all of our narrators are unreliable in this. You guys can directly contradict each other. Don't be dicks. All right. Starting the prologue. Who would like to go first? Who wants to answer the first question to set up our world?
Apparently nobody.
All right, Vinny, it is. Vinny, thanks for talking. You volunteered. Mm-hmm. What is the most prominent physical feature of Oratrios? And what virtue does it metaphorically represent?
Is that the Duke? Oratrios?
Oratrios is the town.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So, most prominent feature?
Most prominent physical feature.
Most prominent physical feature. Okay, I guess here's a question. Am I answering this as myself, or am I answering this under the lens of my character?
You're answering this as yourself.
Okay. I'm going to say the bay leading up to the castle. So there's like a little narrow, it doesn't go all the way to the castle, but it's like a little, like a river,
an
but
inlet.
A little wider. Yeah, like a little inlet that kind of heads in towards the castle that can be very easily defended. Think like King's Landing in Game of Thrones, that type of thing, where it's like a little like cutout to where ships can get a little closer to the castle than just the sea. And it, see, what would that represent?
You could have it represent something like empathy or kindness.
Yes, something that esoteric or something not esoteric. Something.
I mean,
it's
abstract. A virtue. I mean, it's just what virtue does it metaphorically represent?
Yeah.
But it could be something like, you know, like compassion or reaching out, you know, like.
Okay, I think I've got it. It represents unity because it's like this land and sea kind of unified in one place and shows that you can't really. This town can't exist without one or the other.
I like it. Cody, what do parents warn their children about at bedtime? What celebration is tied to that fear?
Ooh. This is the perfect question for Cody.
Right?
Ooh, that is a really good question for Cody. Let me think about that.
Here, I'll give you other questions for the rest of you so you guys can think, so it's not just like 2 minutes of pausing each time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I have an answer, but yeah, go ahead.
Caitlin? You're going to name one group that is traditionally wealthy in this town, okay. And name another group who has supplanted them recently.
Mm, okay.
And then Mandy, what new technology can be found in every home? What members of society has it displaced? And it can be anything. You know, you don't have to just like, it doesn't have to necessarily be something that, like you can make up something magical. You can make up something not, you know, like it doesn't have to be like, Caitlin's like, well, the Cartwrights were really, really good here. You can make up, like, the Guild of Magic Slayers, you know?
Magic Slayers.
Yeah, they use magic to slay magic. All right, Cody.
Okay, so I think this is, like, kind of a metaphor that they would warn kids about. So this goes, like, a level deep. I believe there is, like, a fear of an amphibian-like mer creature that is said to bring blight to crops. So, like, a swamp monster that's kind of looks like a giant frog man. Not giant, but like a giant frog. So a man-sized frog, you know, that like slimes through the fields, bringing decay as the, you know, the wheat and or probably, I guess probably wheat is all rotten in the fields, right? You know, and the cows go starving and you have no food for the winter. This is celebrated in like the end of the rainiest season. So like not necessarily fall, but like midway through summer, once the crops haven't flooded out, right? And so the reason this is a thing is this is an area, as it is like a low and coastal region, I think that flooding is very possible. So what this festival is really about is that the weather was good enough that the fields didn't flood and the crops didn't all die because of rotting in the fields, basically, right? So it's not so much we're worried about drought, we're worried about flooding. And that took on the metaphor of these like frog creatures that bring decay to scare children. So that's what kids are warned against, you know, like if you're out at in the dark, you might see a horrible frogman that will bring rot to your garden. And it's also like a good lesson about being lazy, you know, so like if you don't tend your crops and you like let things get all wet and rot, the frog monster comes and, you know, whatever. Slurps you up into his giant jowls and carries you off.
I love it.
So is this kind of what you're thinking of? I'm showing a picture of a Bullywog from Dungeons and Dragons.
Kind of, just less cute and more more sinister, darker, no spear, maybe wearing like some kind of creepy hat and large cloak, you know, like halfway between a boogeyman and a frog, you know. Yeah, and then like the festival, then it could be, you know, there's like they have one of these come out and the knights all fight it. Oh, that's great. Yeah, there's like, this is their like games that they do is like fighting this creature. So, you know, they like dress a knight up in one of them and then another knight like battles him. And that's like the drama is one of them is the good guy and one of them is the bad guy. So you don't want the creepy frog man to win.
Zach saying we should play Companion's Tale. I see absolutely no repercussions to this. Absolutely none. Zach, 10 minutes into this, what have I created?
No, I mean, that makes sense. Having a famine-based monster tracks.
No, I think the frog thing is great, but then you start making the festival, I'm like, oh, cool. So this is just going to be like, we're going to have to do this frog festival now. this is going to happen.
It's just a small part of their harvest festival, right?
Oh, you know what? No, it's the thing's called a bogmonger. Yeah.
Oh, don't be giving me terms that I'm going to have to remember.
No, it's the Bogmonger, and it's not really the harvest festival. It's more like a late summer festival, which I guess is near harvest, but this is like crops are still green. You know, this is like a high summer festival.
All right. I really do love it, though. It's really cool.
Did you just draw an adorable little frogman on the map? Oh, no, he's an angry frogman.
Yeah, look at those eyebrows.
Oh, yeah, and then definitely indigenous to this region are saltwater frogs that are considered to be bad luck.
I like it. All right, Kaylin, what group is traditionally wealthy?
The group that's traditionally wealthy is the sorcerers from Montaigne that do, it's magic known as porte, or doorway magic. So they bend reality, they can like teleport, and they're often associated with noble families and for obvious reasons have a lot of power. Recently, the Explorers Society has been gaining in power because they go out and like find mystical artifacts and various archaeological things, and sometimes they're just interesting historical things, and sometimes they're items of great power, and they've just like captured popular imagination in a way that Porte used to, and it isn't quite doing it the way it did before.
So it's now like the common thing, everyone wants like an Explorers Guild person on retainer just to tell them like crazy stories and bring like, here's this magical
artifact. Yeah, like it's just in all of the broadsheets. You know, like all of the bards are telling these sorts of stories. There's like a whole underground worth of like counterfeit stuff that supposedly come from the Explorer Society. It's just like totally captured everyone's imagination and everyone's pockets. people will pay good money for this, and the sorcerers of Porte have fallen out of favor. I guess I have to draw that somewhere on our map.
Yes. You got a lot of white space still.
I do, yeah.
Just make a little sorcerer's tower and then make it dilapidated.
There we go. I like that.
Make weeds growing up on it and there's cracks everywhere.
Yeah.
and then make a really nice looking compass. While Caitlin is doing that, because I want her to like suffer and have to draw so many things at once. Mandy, what new technology can be found in every home?
Oh, it's every home. Oh, shoot. Okay, wait. I got to rethink this because I had a good idea.
Well, what was your idea? Like, I mean, like...
We'll workshop it.
So what I wanted to do it based off of the group that is coming into power or is becoming more popular. So my thought was, because it's the explorers, the newest technology is like, well, actually, you know what? Maybe this could work. But the newest technology is basically like metal detectors. And that's why they're suddenly able to find all of these artifacts. But like the explorers would have like the good ones, right? Like the people that go out and like are able to find real ones have ones that are like really well crafted. But like technically everybody could get, you know, the crappy ones that you could go on the beach with.
What if instead of being metal detectors, they're magic detectors?
I could do magic, yeah.
Because if this is just a thought. Everyone's like, I could become one of the Explorers Guild. I could like be a sorcerer if I just like hit it right. So everyone like has one in their home, even if they're just like pieces of junk.
Yeah, no. I like that. The reason I said metal detector was just like, you know, that would be like...
That's how it functions. Yeah.
That's how it functions. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that. I like the idea of there being more like magic detector items. Was there a follow-up question to that?
It is, what members of society has it displaced?
The sorcerers.
Basically anybody with magic in that case, because... Well, maybe not fully displace them, but definitely has made them less in demand.
This is so great. You guys are giving me so many hooks already. I love this.
Mm-hmm. It's made every magic user that has the detect magic spell pretty much useless.
Well, everyone thinks they're useless, you know. Remember, these are the cheap version.
Right.
All right.
Caitlin, that's a shockingly good dilapidated tower, I gotta say.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that looks fantastic.
And let's see, we're doing a compass for the Explorers Guild.
Hey, Zach, can you read us our next stack of prompts while Caitlin finishes up the drawings?
Yeah, so now we're moving on to Act 1, which we start with the historian phase, where I will begin by drawing a theme card, and each player takes a turn describing a historical event inspired by the theme card. Then Caitlin will draw it on the map. Okay, the theme is punishment. Once people were punished for the actions of the elite, or once the people called for the innocent to be punished.
And now, remind me, is this supposed to be what's happening in the interstitial 3 years?
Not yet. This is like what happened before.
Okay, gotcha.
Seems like an odd one for a city we've already established is like Justin.
Yeah, I think I'm going to switch that one out if you guys are cool with that.
I mean, I'm fine with it either way.
We can come up with something, I'm sure.
It can also be, like, more distant than just, like, yesterday. It could be, like, this is why the Duke is loved, is because he, like, fixed this problem.
Yeah, and I mean, like, his assassination came from somewhere, right? So, like, there were people that opposed the way that he ran the town.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it could also be, like, a different, like, about some other noble family that was doing crappy things, while the Duke is trying to run a good city, and these other families are like, no, I'm gonna be evil.
And this one, you guys can go in any order. Like, that's for everyone. You all get to do a historical event.
We each do one?
Yes.
Caitlin, you're still drawing, aren't you, right?
I am, yeah.
Have you drawn Mandy's metal detectors yet?
Oh, no. What do you imagine it looking like, Mandy?
Kind of like the bottom of a metal detector, which isn't helpful. So I think, like, we just do, like... So, like, a metal detector has, like, the circle at the bottom... And then it has some different, there's different ways it looks on the inside. Sometimes it has like more circles, or it has like
spokes,
just like lines inside of it. So like, I think that's kind of how it looks, but just because we probably won't pick up on that, just go ahead and give it its little like handle that people.
I do like the idea of it not having the handle and just people having to carry around this really big disc until it beeps.
Or it's like something that you put in your palm, you know?
Oh, that's kind of, I imagine it's palm size.
Yeah, so okay. You like have it in your palm, then maybe there's like a little thing that glows on it when it's
yeah,
like, in your hand.
It could even have like a little like strap, like you like so you know how when you carry like a large shield, you have like the straps where you strap it to your arm? Mm-hmm. It's got that, but like just for your hand.
All right.
Zach, I have an idea for a historical event, and this goes along with the Bogmonger story. I don't know if you can tell I'm hyper-fixated on the Bogmonger.
That was my joke. It's not that I think the Bogmonger is a bad idea. It's just the Bogmonger is better than anything I will create now. It's Lucy. The Bogmonger is the Lucy.
Oh, just wait. The Bogmonger is about to get better, in my opinion. And you could, this is pretty like big. So if you don't like it, you can totally get away from this. Okay. So the Duke's family, the way they came into power, they were at a time not nobility, correct? So at some point, everyone's not nobility. Everyone has to be knighted eventually and then, you know, move into some,
yeah,
whatever, some rank of nobility. We don't have to get into how that happens necessarily. So, this town or city, I don't remember its name, hit me one more time.
Oratrios?
Oratrios was ruled by lethargic and lazy men who did not care and who were perfectly happy to just tax and eat while their peasants were near starvation. And there was a time when there was mass famine caused by flooding, which is where this story comes from. The peasants began to starve, but more importantly, enough low nobility started to starve. So generally within like, you know, like this type of society, right? Your nobility aren't just statesmen, they're warriors, right? So they're the people that have swords and men at arms that can kill peasants if peasants get out of line and can kill other nobles if other nobles start to invade, right? So if your nobility starts to starve, now you have starving people that are military organized and have swords. So the like high nobility, right? So the Duke of this area, his lower nobility started to starve to the point of rebellion. So kind of like bolstered by peasantry that they armed, the like low nobility basically killed the Duke and claimed the land. And that guy is like a distant relative of our Duke that was just assassinated. This is where the story of the Bog Lurch and the hero that fights him, this is what gets reenacted every Bogmonger, not Bog Lurch, every Bogmonger Day or whatever this festival is called. You know, what's being reenacted is the killing of this, like, kind of toad-like noble that had allowed his peasants to starve while he, you know, grew fat on their food while, you know, food was scarce. The result of this was basically that in order to not lose control of the entire region, a like lowly knight was way ranked up just to keep civil rest, basically. Like, he should have been executed. He killed his lord. He is a traitor, but it's like, if we kill this guy, there will be a revolt. So instead, we're going to validate him. You know what I mean? So like the king or whatever of this area was like, and now you're a duke. Please don't rebel.
I really like that.
And then ever since then, there's been this festival and this. That's like what... So the town used to be like the worst place in the world, and it got so bad that it was conquered by a lower noble. Who basically then was like, well, I'm the king of here now. I dare you to try to stop me. You know, I've got an army of people with nothing to lose.
All right, who would like to go next?
This is a
historical event focusing on punishment.
Focusing on punishment.
Or the theme of punishment.
Okay.
Oh, I have one, I think, if you guys are cool with me jumping in.
Yeah, go for it.
Sure. Do we all have to do it? Or
it's supposed to be everyone does it, but okay. I'm technically not playing.
Oh, gotcha.
But I don't think the Bogmonger Festival started right away. I think the Bogmonger Festival was actually in response, like, years later, after a flood happened, like, people got, like, upset and wanted to, like, kill the farmers. Like, it's like, oh, you're being lazy again. This is what causes, like, all the, like, have issues and problems. And, like, the nobles like, well, we can't have them rebelling again. This would be bad. And we're managing things better, but they're still unhappy because this is, like, how we got there before, if we're not careful. So they started throwing parties and inviting the peasants in and being like, hey, we're going to have a festival every year at the end of harvest. This is a great thing. We're all friends, right? Instead of them, like, starting to attack farmers, and then the farmers getting mad and, like, having no farmers to make crops, and then the nobles starving and then attacking the higher nobles. They're just like, we're not going to punish these innocent people. We're going to, like, bring them into the fold.
Be like, we love farmers. See, we have this party for them every
right.
year.
Like, even if it's a bad harvest, we're, like, we're opening up our really good wine. It's not really the good wine. They don't know the difference.
So instead of Bogmonger Festival, can we call it, so the rebellion would be called the Grain Rot Rebellion?
I like it.
And then I don't think it should be called the Bogmonger Festival. It should be something called, like, the, I don't know. Because it's not a festival about the Bogmonger. It's almost like the Bogmonger Death Festival, but that seems bad.
It should
something
be like,
about knights?
It should be like Harvest Twilight or something. The Harvest Night Festival.
Harvest Night?
But spelled with a K. It's a pun.
No, I think it actually happens at nighttime, and only, like, it has to happen on a particular, like, phase in the calendar. So it's actually the Harvest Moon Festival.
Well, I like Harvest Night with a K, because then it's like they're protecting the harvest. You know, like,
that's actually kind of cool.
Oh, you know, honestly, the Grain Rot Rebellion, that was led by the Harvest Knight. Like, he was given a title. He's the Harvest Knight.
Yeah.
That's like, and then that should be what the sigil of the city is like wheat stalks.
Oh, that's really good. Man, this freaking works so far into this Bogmonger. So in the weeds with David Pumpkins.
Yeah, and then, yeah, then the like, cleaning of history is that the Bogmonger was actually, you know, like, you know, Duke Nefarious or whatever.
Right. Well, I like, and that's why I like
the Admiral Bone to pick.
And I think, like, the festival didn't happen right away because they were just, like, back to the status quo. And then, like, bad stuff happened again. And they're like, oh, people who aren't actually at fault and who aren't doing a bad job are going to be punished in the same way that, like, the bad guys were. So, like, let's make a festival and remind each other, like, we're all on the same team.
Yeah.
We're not terrible.
And the Bog Monster was actually like
Bogmonger, please.
Bogmonger. The Bogmonger was actually based on a historical figure that was kind of lost to history. Like, people didn't consciously realize this. It was actually based on a guy named Bog S. Monger. He has a middle initial now.
I'm so in the weeds with Bog S. Monger.
Hey, Caitlin, what did the sorcerers of Porte, what was like their focus?
They do teleportation magic, like opening basically like opening portals to other places, but they can kind of like bend reality, and there's like a sense of mystery around like the limits of what they can do. Does that feed into what you're doing?
I was just trying to think of moving away from the Bogmonger.
No, there is only Bogmonger.
The Harvest the Harvest Night, something different. I'm going to say at one point there were two main magic guilds, sorcerer's guilds.
Within Porte or Porte and something else?
That's what I was trying to decide, because I can't think of something that would be similar.
It could be like two different schools of thought, where one school within the Porte magic is like, okay, here's what we do, here's our set limits, and the other one's like, let's push all the limits, and that was a subject of strife between them.
I like that. So it'll be so two groups within the Sorcerers of Porte, and I'm gonna say that the group that wanted to push all limits was going too far, to the point where the other group was concerned about like breaking down reality. They framed limit pushers. They framed the limit pushers for some crime that involves them needing to be executed, because they didn't want them to, break time.
Probably murder of someone important, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Which should be the symbol for order. I can just have a little grid.
A grid works.
Yeah.
Vinny and Caitlin.
It's a terrible grid. Well.
I mean, they were terrible at keeping order. They murdered people and then framed other people.
That's the most orderly thing I can imagine. Murder.
Yeah, it's like every game when there's a character that wants to establish order throughout the world, they're usually bad.
Irony that, isn't it?
Zach, looking back on Outlaws Wanted, are we the baddies?
Unambiguously, no.
I think that There's a group of healers that use some magical means and some natural means who used to be, before the Harvest Knight and the Duke's noble line, they used to be kind of pushed into the shadows because it was seen as disrupting the natural order of life and death, like bringing somebody who had gotten sick and was like on the edge of death, like bringing them back from that was like going against fate and was ultimately like seemed like a good thing at the time, but was ultimately going to cause like something like a cosmic imbalance. And so like a lot of like healers and medical, like early medical practitioners were like pushed out or were like doing things pretty under the table when the lower nobility that became the Duke's noble line came into power. They were more accepted because lower nobility had been using them for a long time in order to not die out, given less resources than the higher nobility. And so they were able to like flourish, like lots of new discoveries were made. Refinements in medicinal treatments were made. Because people could share knowledge more freely.
Draw that.
Yeah, draw that, Caitlin. What have I done for myself?
So just draw a little, like...
a mortar and pestle?
Just draw, like, the little, like, red cross.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was just say, just, like, literally, just, like, a red cross and a smiley face.
I'll do the mortar and pestle.
Got it. I'm just thinking of how I would do it, you know, because I can't draw very good, so just, like, X. Done. We got it.
All right, Vinny. You're the last one.
I have an idea. I'm just trying to work it through in my head.
If it's not as good as the Bogmonger, we are throwing it out.
Oh, then we'll just skip it then. Nothing's as good as the Bogmonger.
It is really good.
I do think we already broke the rules, though, because we're not supposed to make characters, and we definitely made, like, three.
We didn't name them specifically, though.
We did. We did one of them.
Not actual name. Give them a title.
You gave him Bog S. Monger.
Well, that was a joke. That wasn't serious.
Well, that's true. Actually, you didn't.
You're the only one, Vinny.
That was me being entirely facetious. But if you want to make it canon, I'll accept it.
It'll just be a running joke. I think it's a running joke in the world more so. Like, no one was named this, but people joke. It's like, careful. It's like Pen 15.
Oh, Jesus.
I swear to God, if you make this thing that I came up with a bad pun, I will quit this podcast.
No, we're just going to have Caitlin rename it soon.
So my thought was, back in the fairly distant past, the Duelist Guild in town basically got to a point where they were so corrupt that they were basically taking any fight that, like, they were taking anybody's money that would give it to them and just being absolutely merciless. There was none of the pomp and circumstance and almost camaraderie around dueling as there is now. And because they got so corrupt and so... I wouldn't necessarily say that they were powerful. They were just basically out of control as well. Kind of like the limit pushers. Basically, the nobility forced them out of town. Basically just like, you can't be here anymore, and established a new duelist guild in its place. That one that would follow the rules and one that would actually kind of be a useful function in society rather than just indiscriminately killing anyone.
How long ago was this?
I would say probably a few hundred years.
Okay.
This was duelist, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, the duelist guild was corrupt and too ruthless for what the duelist guild is supposed to be and got forced out and replaced with a shiny new duelist guild.
Oh, right.
And I imagine a lot of those duelists that were forced out probably became pirates.
Probably. So, we didn't get as far as I thought we would, but I think we're going to end here tonight, because I don't...
It depends on how long you want me to riff on Bogmongers.
I mean, there's more stuff, but it's like going around, everyone gets to answer basically three questions, and I'm like, that's going to take a hot second. I figure we can save that for next time. Hey Wanderers, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Corsairs of Castile.
This game is being run in the 7C 2nd Edition system. If you want to hear more content from the Wandering Gamer Network, you can check us out at the Wandering Gamer Network website. We stream on Twitch with the username wandering_gamers, and you can follow us on Twitter at @WGNPodcast. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. All information about the music used can be found in the episode description. Until next time, wherever you wander, may you find your way home.